Hello, and welcome back to Millennial 2021. I realised I didn't say at the start of the last stream that this is the final night as such, because tomorrow night it's just Morgoth. So this is the final night of multiple streams. And I'm sorry I didn't say that. It didn't occur to me. So anyway, it's been a good run, and it's not we've all got to get back to normality. But anyway, I'm now here with the Iconoclast, Dan from the Iconoclast. He's been on quite, I think the first time you were on was 2017. So, and obviously a lot has happened over the last, a lot's happened over the last 2 years, but over the last year or so, you and I have both been banned. Well, it was the middle of last year, wasn't it, when you were banned from YouTube and doxed. And you had, even before then, you were sort of beginning to detach. You were thinking of taking a break, and then that was sort of taken out of your hands in a way. Obviously, that's a terrible, it's a bummer. But what would you like to talk about with in regard to that? Because I think a lot of people wonder, how you're doing these days and what you're up to.
Well, thank you for having me on again. This is my fourth appearance, I think. Merry Christmas, everyone in the chat, by the way. Merry late Christmas. I hope you'll have a better 2022 than the past 2 years, although that remains to be seen. We'll all go through it together, I suppose.
Yes.
we'll see. I guess what the weird thing is, Colin? When I got banned, it feels like such a long time ago now. It feels like I was almost a different person. Because back then, and I don't know if you feel the same way, because you've been more active than I have, but back then I was really entrenched in this movement, in this scene, in the YouTube thing. And, so much so that I would wake up every morning, open my laptop, look at the news and say, well, what can I make a video about this week? And it became a bit, I was getting a bit burnt out, because I felt like, even back then, I was thinking, God, I mean, it's a drag, that just waking up to bad news every day, surrounding yourself with that all the time. And of course, Telegram, as much as it's a really entertaining app and you can keep in touch with people, it is just a lot of disaster porn every day, all day long. So much so that, I've left every single chat group that I was a part of, every single, apart from private groups with friends of mine. And apart from the crypto chat, because that just goes off in multiple directions.
Yeah. I think that this is part of, in my own chat group, MW Public, I try to discourage people from blackpilling each other and just reporting, forwarding an article from some newspaper about another terrible thing that's happened, another migrant rape. 5 years ago, I was making videos on YouTube with getting thousands of views about these topics, whereas I now basically discourage people from dwelling on it, because it's just so depressing.
Yeah, of course. And it's not like we're saying you shouldn't learn about the bad stuff that's going on, because you can't really avoid it. And to stay informed, then you sort of have to be aware of all of it. But at the same time, you can just invade your own brain with it too much, and then it just gets you down all the time. I remember I was living my life, or trying to at least, and I was out at a restaurant with a friend or something, or in the bar, and I would just find myself drifting and thinking, oh God, but the situation, the demographics in Birmingham, blah, blah, blah. You know what I mean? I would just like get myself down a bit. And it's not that it's not important, because it clearly is. I listened to a bit of Mark, who was on before me, just now tonight, and he said, you can't forget about the demographic problem. And I haven't forgotten about the demographic problem, because it's a huge issue. But at the same time, good Lord, what else can I say? What other takes can I offer? Everyone knows the problem. What are the solutions? At the minute, it seems incredibly difficult to determine what we have to do, especially with the entire COVID/Agenda 21 nonsense that's going on. So yeah, I mean, I feel like I'm a bit of a limbo right now. I'm a bit detached. I'm a bit of a nomad, And I'm happy to stay that way for the time being. I think I just need to reassess everything. And obviously my real life has improved immeasurably since the channel got deleted, which is ironic. I'm sure you can relate. When you have that channel on YouTube and you're dedicating all your time to it, your real life sort of comes to a standstill in a way.
Oh, I mean, with me, it's a slightly different story, but put it this way. When I lost the YouTube channel, I was already quite detached from it. Because 2.5 years earlier, I had been banned from Twitter, and it had been a very traumatic experience because I was.
I remember.
I think a lot of people will remember. And it was so traumatic, partly because I was just in a bad way in general at that time, but also because I'd become addicted to the platform. And so losing it was like, traumatic. I mean, quite literally traumatic. I don't think that's an exaggeration. So, so that was the experience of loss. And you know, a lot of people talk about this, not so much nowadays, but you know, back then it was a sort of thing of e-celebs getting deplatformed and it being a really difficult thing for them to go through because you've lost, you know, you lose your reach, you lose your livelihood in some cases, and even your sort of raison d'etre, what you've been doing from day to day. You don't know what to do, but now that you don't have that platform to broadcast on, what do you do? I mean, it is a very, I bet in the arena of like real celebrity, there are probably experts, whole programs, things that celebrities can do when they go through the experience of losing a contract or something, because it's something that happens so often that there'll be infrastructure in place to help them deal with it. But whereas for us, it's like there is no infrastructure, there is no manual. These things are all completely new. It's never happened before, so no one knows how to deal with it. So you've just got to roll with it and, you know, get over it, which of course in the end everyone does.
Oh yeah. I mean it's not that big a deal really when you put it into perspective, because we had YouTube channels, big deal, right? But at the same time for us it was a big deal because for Jesus Christ, I dedicated 5 years of that, 5 years of my life to that, and it was my life. I could have probably balanced it in a different way because, like I just said, my real world life, so to speak, was a bit stagnant when I was doing the channel full time. But even so, it was a big deal at the time, and not to suck my own knob, right? But I feel like I did pretty good stuff, and I think you did really good stuff as well. And everybody who's been deplatformed, I think we had a purpose. That time between 2017 and 2019, I really genuinely felt like we were a part of something, that there was something happening. This wave, I genuinely felt that way.
Definitely. And I think what you say that we were making good stuff, that's not just to puff ourselves up. I think this is a worthwhile point making in and of itself, that we're not just talking about stuff being deleted. We're talking about good stuff being deleted. And we're talking about talented people being suppressed. And you know, this is the kind of thing that you hear about. Yeah, totalitarian regimes silencing the artists, silencing the thinkers and whatever. But that's exactly what's going on here. When I think about all the waste that's going on now, because people are, so many creators and commentators are suppressed. It's fucking horrible. I think that these people at YouTube and Twitter should be ashamed of themselves. You know, like all the effort that I would put into a video, and I know you did as well. And there's craftsmanship, there's skill, time, patience, and all of that just goes. You know, they see it as just a crime, really, a sort of moral crime that you made yes. that video, so we can delete it without any conscience at all. And then these are the same people who will go on about book burnings. I mean, that's the big fucking irony here.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, we could point out the hypocrisy all day long, but they don't give a shit about right. that.
Imagine if the rules were reversed.
Oh, imagine this. Yes, yes. You know, the whole, they oppose ID to vote, but they support vaccine passport. You know, all that shit.
I know.
You know, we get it.
I know.
But here's the thing. I want to thank you personally, actually. And I've thanked you in, you know, privately a long time ago, but I want to do it in public because I want people to know how important this scene was and still is in many ways. When I got the word that I was going to be doxxed by a national newspaper, The Observer, which is the Guardian sister paper, I was like, well, this is a new experience for me. And the email that I use this word loosely, the journalist sent me when he told me he was going to do this was so cold, and it was like he didn't give a shit. And he clearly doesn't. And we'll get into that in a second. I want to bring that up. But anyway, I was in a bit of a lost place, and I gave you a call, and you said, because you'd experienced doxing before, you said, listen, it's going to be bad for 3 or 4 days, and then you'll get over it. And you're right. That's exactly what it was. And it wasn't really my problem. It was the fallout in regards to my family, for example.
Yes.
For Christ's sake, why does a Daily Mail journalist, again, using that word loosely, need to knock on my grandmother's front door? Doesn't need to happen. Ridiculous. So I just wanted to thank you for calming me down personally, and I was able to deal with it in a much more, measured way when the shit hit the fan in my personal life. So I want people to understand that you really helped me in that regard.
Oh, well, I mean, you're welcome. And I was glad that I was able to help. I mean, it's sometimes it's like, okay, I had this terrible experience, but the payoff is that it means I'm able to help someone else. So I remember feeling, well, okay, I'm glad that I was able to. I mean, I think obviously every doxing is different, and you can never quite know how it's, and also every family is different. And this is something for obvious personal reasons, I'm not going to talk about my family or how it's affected them, and I wouldn't ask you to do that either. But I will say that a relative of mine who was ill was visited by a journalist, and
you don't have to go into this.
It's
if you
just
don't want
awful.
To.
It's right. Just sickening. I'm not on the verge of tears. It's disgusting when I think about how wicked they are, how evil they are, what they do. That relative was a elderly woman with a mental, not all there anymore. And this man came to that door, knocked on her door to get a quote so that she, it's repulsive. I mean, the moral, and this is the thing that they paint us as the villains. And I think this is, I mean, I don't want to make this into a big sort of pity stream, but it is so perverse that they make us look like the villains when what they've done is something just inherently disgusting. I mean, in my case, they basically destroyed the family. And I know other people, it's been that bad for them. It's been that serious.
Yeah, I was quite lucky because my family, for the most part, at least the close family members that I have, parents, grandparents, etc., they knew exactly what I was doing. And they, I wasn't hiding from them in that regard. They knew exactly what I thought about stuff. We talk about it all the time. And when the doxing happened, I said to them, listen, this might get a bit rough for a while, but it'll pass. But the thing that I really just find so telling about that situation, and you can compare it to what's going on now in a way, is the journalists that were really going for it in that scenario, they don't actually care. They're not ideologically driven. They just want to see their name in print. Which is even worse in a way, because it means nothing to them. They're soulless. They're doing it for a career purpose. I mean, the Daily Mail guy that knocked on, I lived at a flat at the time, and we had an intercom system rather, and he pressed the number, the phone rang, and I picked it up. He's like, yeah, I'm blah, blah, blah from the Daily Mail. I want to get your side of the story. And I literally just told him to fuck off.
Yeah,
like, fuck off, you idiot. I mean, you know,
it's like, I know this is outrageous. Like, I want to get your side of the story while I'm in the process of ruining your life. So
yeah, I mean, you can see right through it. It's bullshit. It's bullshit that these people don't believe in anything.
No.
Some of them might. I mean, okay, if someone from Navarra Media turned up, yeah, it's still annoying, but at least I'm thinking, well, you do sort of push an ideological stance, at least. At least you believe in something, no matter how much I disagree with it. But these tabloid journalists, again, that's not the right word for them. These tabloid scum.
Parasites.
They don't, parasites, yeah, these insects. They don't believe in anything. They just want to see their name in print. They're trying to prolong their own short, meaningless careers. And put it this way, when they're lying on their deathbed and they think, what have I achieved in life? And they think, well, I doxed Millennial Wars. I doxed the Iconoclast. I got Way of the World banned from YouTube. It's like, oh, great achievement. Well done. What a wonderful use of your life, you fucking idiot.
Yeah. And I remember saying that in my video at the time, that, you know, I've helped thousands of people. I can't remember how. And that what have you done? Like these journalists, the journalists who did that. What have you done with your life? And, you know, it was a sincere question because I thought, you're probably a piece of shit. And, you know, I've got unfashionable views, therefore you're calling me evil and painting me as a villain. But I don't go around trying to ruin people's lives for money. So, I mean, you know, it's infuriating. There was another aspect of this that I was going to touch on. But anyway, I can't remember now. I think that it was the thing about what are their motivations, because I've wondered about this as well. You know, in my case, there was Antifa as involved in it, Scottish Antifa. As far as, I mean, I can't actually remember all the details now, but as I recall, the Antifa were connected to the then leader of the Scottish Labour Party, Kezia Dugdale. And the Antifa were also related to one of the journalists, the guy who actually showed up at my door and said, are you Mr. Robertson, I'd like to ask you about Millennial Woes. it was fucking hell. But yeah, they were. I think they were related to each other. It's really quite amazing. But yeah, I've wondered about the motivations. Like, did they do it for... Like, I think the Daily Record guy who actually broke the story, I think probably he's, as you say, believes in nothing. Just career advancement. And is actually prepared to casually destroy someone's life so that his career is advanced. But I think the others, probably it's political. I think ideological. But you never know.
Yeah, it might be. It might be. I mean, I've got a Labour Party story of my own. I don't know if it's true. I've just heard, you know, you hear things and people go on streams and there was some bloke who claimed to be a member of the Labour Party. And he said, oh, when we went to meetings, we would discuss how to get the Iconoclast banned from YouTube. And I don't know if that's true. If it is true, I'm going to put it as a notch on my belt because it's pretty fucking hilarious, right?
Yeah.
The Labour Party were concerned about a YouTuber. I don't know if it's actually true or not, but I'll take it, you know, no matter what.
Adds to
the legend of everything, I suppose. But yeah, I mean, what people's motivations, it almost doesn't matter anymore, because what we're seeing now with the great scam that we're experiencing is, again, the media, they don't have a position. I mean, if anything, they're just government mouthpieces. There's no opinion there whatsoever. It's just, oh, we need to do this because the government says so. Oh, you're a bad person because so-and-so said so. It doesn't make any sense. And by the way, before we continue, I just want to say I've been listening to Millennial this year. I haven't listened to everything, but I've listened to enough. And I'm very aware of people in the chat. You've discussed the current scenario, the current situation to death. And I'm very conscious about that. And I don't want to just repeat all talking points and go over the same conversation again. So I'm just using that as a reference. We can keep it as light as you want. We can talk about 90s game shows if you like. I'm cool with that. But it is, you know, the situation now is basically symbolic of what happened to me and what happened to you in terms of how the media treats literally everything these days. It's just like, well, doesn't really matter. Whatever.
Yeah. I mean, they would actually, I think they would say that, well, we did this to ourselves. You know, I destroyed my family. It wasn't them. They just wrote about it. They just did what I made, like, you know, whatever. But again, it's just so disingenuous. Because, you know, and there's no need for me to go into this. I did go into it at the time, and everyone knows what happened and the details. But, yeah, the way they twist things is unbelievable. The sheer dishonesty and the ways they find to phrase something in a misleading way, but that they'll still get away with legally. You know, this kind of stuff, it's just... You realize how awful, like, journalists really are the fucking scum of the earth. I think they're, I don't know who, which group of people, like, which profession you could say is worse than journalists.
Well, no, neither can I. I don't know. Philanthropists, maybe. all these philanthropists.
Possibly.
Mr. Gates. Yeah. They're probably the worst ones. I'd love to be a philanthropist, I think. That's my ambition in life now. It was just to sort of, you know, get a house and start a family. Now I want to be a philanthropist. I really, really help the world in all the areas that needs help, including depopulation. Anyway, I'm joking around here, but I don't think we need to come on here and chat about how bad things are, because we can all tell, and we all know, everyone in the chat knows. And again, you've had, I mean, how many conversations have you had this year? Like 50 odd for Millennial?
Something like that. I think we're up to about 58 at this point.
Bloody hell. Yeah. So, I know the total, you've covered the ground.
Yeah. I think the total is 63 or 64. I mean, I'm going to try to reschedule. Well, there's Milo, fault people. and then there's Idealism Identity, who had to cancel. And, Aureus Press said that he would like to appear. So I'm thinking maybe of moving Morgoth, because I asked him if he could do the night after tomorrow instead. So I might move it, add an extra night tomorrow with another four streams. Mm. It depends. Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, why not? Yeah, I'm already fucking worn out. So it doesn't make much difference, does it?
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. And I have to say, tonight you've sandwiched me between Colette and Enoch. So, I mean, thank you for that one. There's no way I can compete with either of them. They can all, you know, they both can go off all day about what they're thinking, and they can articulate their points and stuff. And
yeah, and I imagine the one with Enoch is going to be, I'm going to have to be quite high energy for that, because he is high energy. He's very talkative, and it might be quite similar to the Mark one, actually. I'm not sure. That's the thing. You never know. You never know how a stream is going to go. So it's one of the nice things about doing these. I'll keep people updated about tomorrow on Telegram. And either way, there will be something happening, whether it's the big Morgoth one or whether it's another night of another regular night. We'll see.
Mm. Yeah. Well, Morgoth will go deep into basically everything that's going on. That'll be like a 3.5 hour stream. So have him on by himself. And ask him, just as a curiosity for me, ask him if he ever knew Raoul Moat. Because I was on a stream with the Ayatollah a few weeks ago, and we were just having a joke, and we're thinking, you know, Raoul Moat's the sort of guy that Morgoth probably knew. You know, in the Working Man's Club or something. So ask him from me if he knew him. That'd be interesting to know. Yeah, well, fisherman, apparently.
Bloody hell. yeah, what was he, the one with the crossbow? He was the one who... Yeah. That, well, fuck,
Paul
that
Gascoigne turned up with a fishing rod and a bag of chicken or something after Raoul Moat had shot a bunch of people.
That was bizarre.
That was 10 years
ago now or something.
God, yes.
But yeah, this is the kind of thing that if we were on YouTube, I'd now be worrying, because, oh fuck, we've mentioned that. A criminal. Is that going to be used against us? But that was one thing I did want to say, is that, you know, nowadays, and I've said this before, but I'll say it to you. Nowadays, I don't miss Twitter in the slightest. It's like the polar opposite of how I felt at the time. Because after I got banned, I created a sock account, and I did that, like, I think I had four or five sock accounts, because each one would only last a few months. And then I think I lost, like, the fifth one in the middle of last year, and I just couldn't be bothered, like, creating a new one, because it's so onerous. And they mean, they want it to be onerous. Like, it's linked to your phone, it's linked to an email address, etc. So it's very difficult to actually, well, it's not very, obviously you can do it if you want to, but it's fiddly and annoying. It's inconvenient to have a sock account. And furthermore, you know, you'll never have the same numbers that you had on the official account. So there's always this sort of, you're always, it's like a sort of ongoing humiliation, a reminder of their power over you. So anyway, I got banned for the last time, and I just thought, no, I can't be bothered. And it was a great decision, terrific decision, because now I don't know anything about what goes on Twitter. Like, all the drama, the gossiping, the backbiting is all someone else's problem now. It's great. It's real liberation.
Yeah, I've had three or four accounts on Twitter banned this year alone. But I never try and garner an audience. I always go on with a fake name because I just want to keep up with what's going on. You know, like the protest videos across Europe. Yeah, I can't find them. I mean, there's some on Telegram, but really Twitter, there's a lot of accounts that go to these protests and post videos, and I just want to keep up with it like that. But they always sniff me out, man. I don't even post anything. I don't even say much. It's just like, okay, we remember you. Get off.
You know, smell you, Dan.
We can smell you. You stink. Yeah, of course.
I was contemplating creating an account just for that, and not telling anyone. Like, not even like not telling anyone this is me. Just using it to keep up with other people. Mm. But now that you've said that, I think I won't even bother doing that.
No, it's not. It's not. There's no point. I mean, the problem is you feel like you need it and you don't need it. You feel like you're missing out on information or whatever. And you might be missing out on some stuff, but you have to evaluate how important it is to your everyday existence that you're on there. And it's not really.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's the way it is. But I mean, we can move on. We've all been banned from something at this point. It's crazy what's happening. it's the way it is. And it wasn't not predicted back in God knows when, 2018 or something. We all knew this was going to happen. The problem now is, how do we actually do anything without a platform to do it? I know Odyssey's really come along. I know Telegram is what it is. But at the same time, the reason why YouTube was so effective is because you could reach people that were probably just on there to watch, I don't know, a film review or something, and then you get redirected. I mean, I was saying this, I've been on a couple of streams this year, and I said, I think I said to Chris Dangerfield, when I'm on YouTube now, because I've got a random normie account, I don't follow anything political, and I never get served anything political. But what I do get served is the critical drinker, for example, who reviews films, but they do it in a very politically charged way. They do it through the lens of like, well, this is what's happening in society, and this is what's been portrayed in this piece of pop culture. We know what's happening now, and they relate it. And these videos get millions of views, but they're almost on top of the target, you know? They're almost there. In a year's time, they might be saying, why is this white character being recast as an Indian? You know, or something like that. And then they'll get chopped. Then they'll get kicked off.
I actually think it'll happen the other way around, where the censorship will reach them, where they currently are. I honestly think that 5 years from now, they're like, Sargon will be banned. PJW will be banned.
I don't even know what Sargon's up to these days. I have no idea. I have no idea what's happening.
Yeah.
What's he up to?
He does a thing called the Lotus Eaters nowadays. I'm not just saying this because I'm not like being a bitch. I don't think it's...
Oh, really, come on, be a bitch, Colin.
Well, I just don't think it's as good as his solo work.
His earlier work.
Yeah. But I just don't, you know, because his earlier stuff was more spontaneous. It was him talking to the camera. It's that more enjoyable. Right? But what he does now, it does get very good views. So I imagine it's, you know, successful and all that. But yeah, the thing about the, what was we were just saying? Oh, yeah. So the censorship, I think we'll reach them because, you know, they could stay where they are, like the quartering, you know, all this. They're still going to get. Eventually, the system is just going to decide. Well, we don't actually have a use for you. We don't need. We don't want you here. Yeah. So, there's no reason for us to tolerate you being here. So, you know, I mean, it's not like they're worried about looking censorious. They don't give a fuck.
No, they don't care about that. I think it's ironic though, because before I started the Iconoclast on YouTube, I actually had a film review channel from like 2015 onwards to 2016.
Right.
I just find it ironic that, you know, because I was saying the same stuff back then, obviously through that lens, and now it's come full circle, and now the most popular people on YouTube talking about cultural issues are film reviewers. It's very interesting. Maybe I should have just stuck at that. You know, I persevered with my 51 subscribers.
You know, I will admit that thought has occurred to me. Yeah, if I just did a film review channel and never talked about race or Islam or whatever... back in the day, I might have like 500,000 subscribers by now, just talking about films. And, you know, I will admit, I thought, you could have had a simpler life, Colin. less turbulent.
They rake it in as well. I mean, the super chats alone on their channels are absolutely crazy. Thousands of pounds a night. It's absolutely insane. But you know what? There is something to that, isn't it? It's a way in. If you criticize pop culture and do it from a certain angle, you can, you know, highlight issues that may or may not have been easy to highlight in other ways. I mean, I know Matrix analogies are so old hat, and forgive me, chat, for doing this, but
the whole COVID... I know exactly what you mean.
Morpheus, yes. At last. Anyway, so the COVID scam that's going on right now, you know, we don't need to get into it in any deep way because you've had these conversations 50-odd times by now, but in the first Matrix, which is the only good Matrix in my opinion, of course, controversial opinion, there's a great scene. The best scene in the film is when Morpheus is taking Neo through a training program. It's the scene with the woman in the red dress.
Oh, yes.
And they're walking through the city and all of these normies are bumping past him, blah, blah, blah. And Morpheus says to Neo, he says, you know, most of these people, their minds aren't ready to be unplugged. And if the system that they depend on gets threatened, they will fight to defend it. And then there's a scene where a normie literally turns into an agent. And of course, the message is these obedient normies, these sheep, are basically unknowing soldiers of the state. You know, whatever they want to push on you, that's what's going on. And of course, that's what the last 2 years, in my opinion, have really illuminated to me. It's been very, very difficult for me to look at my fellow Brit and say, you know, I love you.
You know,
I want you to do well.
Yeah.
It's that sort of thing, you know, and I know that might be a bit cynical or controversial, but that's exactly how I feel. I'm trying to get over that now. It's not being blackpilled. It's just sort of recognizing that a large segment of the population will always just be part of the herd, and you've got to navigate through that, which is unfortunate.
And it's a very difficult thing to deal with because, you know, for a long time, I was able to just say, well, it's not their fault. It's what they are. It's that they're followers, and they're still my people. At some point, I stopped being able to feel that. And I've talked about this a few times on my weekly show throughout this year, that this is why I feel that Mark and I are on quite different pages at this stage. You know, I don't want to negate what he's doing. I have no interest in doing that at all. I think that what he's doing is his heart is in the right place, and I think it's going to have a positive effect. PA, I think, is a good thing. So I'm not, you know, in any way discouraging people from getting involved in that. But for my own self, it's like I do feel quite detached. But that might be because I live in London and there aren't that many British people here. So maybe I've just literally lost contact with them. And you know, that might be why I feel much less connected to them than I did a few years ago, five years ago, when I had a very, very powerful feeling of responsibility for them. At this point, it's like they've... And this is the thing about burning out. You know, being in this movement and being a prominent figure in it, as you know, is a big responsibility. It weighs on you, but also you get fucking hurt in different ways. And when you see the British public agreeing, applauding your deplatforming, applauding your doxing, applauding your demonization in the media, it's difficult to tell yourself that you should love them.
No, I completely agree. You're right. I mean, I didn't watch the entirety of your previous stream with Mark. I saw the last 15 minutes or so. But again, we're speaking generalizations, right? So I'm not saying that I have to physically, literally love every single British person. I'm not going to walk down the street and hug them. But, you know, demographics is important. These people have the right to exist and to continue existing in that sense.
Yeah.
Of course.
No, they do. They absolutely do. I mean, there's
of course.
And this is something that I sort of use to remind myself of this situation. I use this tool to bring myself back from these thoughts, which is the people who tell you that you shouldn't feel responsibility for your ethnic kin are the most ethnocentric people in the world.
Right.
You know, the people who tell you that you shouldn't feel a connection with them are the most ethnocentric people in the world. Mm. So bear that in mind. You know, even if you do feel disconnected from them, bear in mind that clearly ethnocentrism works for other people. Undoubtedly, it works very well for them.
So we all know that. Yeah, of course.
Even just on a practical level, like because of that, I think ethnocentrism should be encouraged among white people, among European peoples, because clearly it is an invaluable survival tool. And there's no doubt about that. It's just, and you know, there are mathematical models that have found that individualism just leads to you get defeated every single time by the ethnocentric group. Now, a group of individuals is just a group of sitting ducks next to an ethnocentric group. That has been demonstrated. It's worth keeping that in mind when you have these thoughts. And I do, you know, the other part of this. And this is the kind of thing that I wanted to talk about next year. I think that white people regard racial identity, ethnic identity. I'm sure that in the past, they had a connection to it and they cared about it just instinctively. It wasn't a conscious or political thing for them because it never needed to be. But in this day and age, when it's said to them, or when they hear that they should care about their race or their ethnic group, I think the reaction of white people to that, when they actually hear it said out loud, is, well, why? That sounds like something that losers would do. I'm concerned with, yeah, I've got my own life. I don't need my racial identity. I don't need that as a crutch. I think that white people, they have this this individualism, which makes them think that if somebody does care about his race, it's because he doesn't have much else going on in his life.
Yeah, he's a knuckle dragger or something like that.
Or he's a loser. So he's got to latch on to this. And again, the thing is, the other groups, they are ethnocentric all the time. You know, whether they're successful or not, it's just the normal thing for them to do. So again, this is something that white people really should just get over. They should get over this hang-up that, oh, it's about, it's a, it's a refuge for unsuccessful people and for losers and misfits or whatever. No, it's what everyone else all over the world does.
Yes, we're the only group of people in the world that have been taught and indoctrinated to deny nature, basically. And you're right. When you try and explain this to people, it's very much, you know, you feel like you're standing in front of a whiteboard with a pointer saying, this is why you should care. This is what's going to happen if you don't care.
Yeah.
And blah, 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 blah. Whereas everyone else just sort of gets it. And I remember when Jordan Peterson first burst on the scene a couple of years ago. And that was this entire thing. It was like, no, no, don't even think about that. Don't even worry about that. That's crazy. That's bad things from history will happen if you go down that line of thought. Yada, yada, yada.
Yeah.
And it's just, I mean, here's the thing. It's so frustrating for us because it's so easy for us to tear that apart, that worldview. And yet it still persists.
Well,
rather.
I mean, he's ideologically individualistic. The kind of detachment that we were talking about earlier, I think, is more an incidental individual. It's not like there's an ideological decision that we don't care about our group or whatever. It's that we feel disenchanted with them for emotional reasons. Jordan Peterson, he's ideologically driven to not care about his group, which is a different thing. It's a lot more poisonous. It's a lot less human, actually. He is a kind of robot.
I was just about to say he's robotic. Yeah, of course. And don't forget, he's the guy that said, was it last year, when the government was rolling out all these vaccine things, he's like, just get the vaccine. Just do it. It's like, mate, your entire career is based around not trusting power.
Yes.
And you're just saying, just do it. Why don't you just get vaccinated?
I mean, you know, this guy is unbelievable because I remember when Kavanaugh got acquitted or just in the run-up to the
verdict. Oh, God, yeah.
And yeah, he said, Jordan Peterson said that if he is acquitted, that we should get the right should, he should relinquish his candidacy for the Supreme Court anyway, because that would be a gesture to the left. It would be a fig leaf, an olive branch or something. So we have to
appeal to our enemies. That's the way to do it. Yeah,
yeah,
of course.
I mean, the guy is unbelievable. It's like he's never been in a fight in his life. And I don't even just mean a physical fight. But I mean, he has no idea what it is to actually fight for something. Because I think he's lived in this ivory, sort of academic environment in which he hasn't rebelled, really, up until recently. So he thinks that reason wins and decency wins, and showing you that turning the other cheek wins and showing good faith wins. But it doesn't when you're up against people who don't care about your good faith or your goodwill.
You know what you just said there? You've hit on something important, and I wanted to bring this up. And I don't want people to take this the wrong way or in a thuggish way, but you're right. People like Peterson, and you can extend that to anyone in academia or in the government, they've never been in a fight, whether it be a real verbal fight or even a physical fight in their lives. But all of these people that are dictating to us right now, all of these ridiculous rules and pushing through all of these agendas, I immediately think of Dan Andrews in Australia, that guy. Absolutely crazed guy who's going just absolutely insane. I always think, you know what? If these people were in a room with a regular construction worker for 5 minutes alone, they would change their fucking tune very quickly. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like when you break it down to that level, it is just a bunch of beta males with too much power going mad. And they need to be brought back down to earth. And unfortunately, our current system, our current paradigm doesn't allow that to be a realistic option. Very unfortunately, because that would be amazing. If Bill Gates was in a room with anyone really who's been negatively affected by whatever's going on, it would be amazing, but it's not going to happen.
I mean, you can just imagine him venturing to say something in his fucking weaselly, nasally voice and other people not even noticing him because he's just so pathetic and weak and sickly looking.
Yeah.
You're absolutely right. I would say the same about Jordan Peterson for sure. I think he's actually a very feminine man. I don't really know why people don't point this out more often, that there's really nothing masculine about him. Like the way he speaks, the way he, even his body language is extremely delicate. And, you know, I don't want to demonize that in and of itself, but when you've got a guy who's telling young men about masculinity, who's like that, there's a bit of a contradiction.
Yes, of course. And when you said that, I immediately thought of Jordan Peterson and Douglas Murray sitting with cross legs across each other.
Oh, you know what I mean?
These dainty, oh, we're going to sit here for 3 hours with our legs crossed and talk about, oh, God, the theory of everything.
The strange death of Europe.
Yeah, what's fucking strange about it, Douglas? Jesus. You know, tell me that. Fucking idiot.
I've made some pretty vicious Telegram posts about Douglas Murray. And, you know, sometimes I worry that I went too far and was cruel. But, you know, he's such a... Ah, he's just so disingenuous. He's so fake. Even calling choosing that title for his book tells you immediately, even the title alone tells you he's going to keep things back from you. He's not going to, because the death of Europe is not really, well, okay, you could look into it. Obviously, there are financial interests, tribal interests, but there is also the side of it, which is a bit stranger, which is the spiritual side of it. Did we just lose our mojo? And I think that this is, and then it goes back to World War One as well.
Of course.
The destruction of ancient dynasties and aristocracy and monarchy. But again, even that isn't really strange because it's happened throughout history.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
You have to sort of make it strange by pretending that it's baffling. It's not really baffling. You've got that historical, civilizational explanation, and then you've got the more proximate explanation as well.
Well, I own that book, The Strange Death of Europe, and I was reading it. And to be fair, it's a good book. I can't trash it. It's a good book. It really identifies what's going on. But you finish it and you think, well, Douglas Murray is not honest because he traveled across the entire continent to see these things happening and he wrote about them. And yet he names the book. It's a strange death of Europe. I mean, for God's sake, you cannot go across. I mean, it's the lack of solutions. It's the lack of proposals. It's the lack of saying anything that might possibly be taken as a sign of, I don't want to use the word aggression, but a bit out there. You know, even though it's not out there, these are...
Assertiveness.
Yes, that's a great way of saying it, assertiveness. There's nothing there. It's just, wow, well, isn't this crazy? The world's gone mad. Woo.
Absolutely. You know, I can remember him after the election last year saying that it was just disavowing Trump and saying it's amazing that such a man could ever win office in the first place. And we'll just have to hope that Joe Biden does something about the political corruption in America. So the very guy who has just benefited directly from the political corruption, you're hoping that he'll do something about the political corruption.
Amazing, right? Incredible.
What the fuck?
This new guy, this puppet president that's in office that doesn't even have a brain, apparently. He's in league with the big tech who literally deleted and banned a sitting president of the United States. Let's just hope something works out to our benefit.
Yeah.
It'll work out in the end.
Let's just hope. It's like the Jordan Peterson thing. Let's hope that our enemies take our side. Well, why would they? I mean, it's just ridiculous. It's like justifying personal spiritual impotence. I guess people are saying it's the thing about Murray's book is that there aren't solutions. It's a good enough book, but there just aren't any solutions. I think it's the same with Peterson. You know, yes, it's important to tidy your room, and it is. You know, let's be honest. It's important. It's good for your morale. It's good for your outlook on life if you've got your immediate situation sorted out.
Well, he's basically saying stop being a teenager in a 30-year-old man's body. That's essentially what he's telling you.
Yeah, but no, the issue is that his advice basically ends there and says, and don't worry about society. But just like he's doing the same thing, like, oh, just go along with the vaccine.
Yeah.
Just do what they tell you. Fuck!
Why would they lie to you? Why would they have any other intention other than your perfect health at heart? Yeah, of course. I mean, why would they lie about WMDs in Iraq? It beats me. Crazy.
Exactly.
Now, exactly. I think a few years ago, what do they call themselves? The intellectual dork web. These guys.
Awful.
Was it Rubin and is it Weinstein or Weinsteins? I don't know.
I don't.
To be fair, one of them has been pretty good on the COVID shit. I can't remember which one it is, but one of them.
I think it's Eric, but that is true. But it was that, and I can't remember the others now. But
and Peterson,
the intellectual dark web. Yeah,
but I think we've moved on from that now a little bit. So next steps, you've got things like GB News, for example, which I think it's not the intellectual wankery of the intellectual dark web. It's now like we're going to try and revive populism.
It's
and that's what they're trying to do.
I'm amazed at the things that Neil Oliver says on there. You know, I really quite enjoy watching his clips that they put up. Somehow this is the thing about being off Twitter and YouTube. Somehow these clips still arrive in my life. I don't really know how.
That's
it just happens. I mean, like my friend Martin Lichtmes, he shared quite a few. He gave that, like he said, he would send them to me personally because he really likes Neil Oliver. Or you'll get it in. I'll get it in my Telegram or some group that I'm in or channel. So Telegram is actually quite, I'm not going to say it's as good as Twitter, but I think it kind of is. I'm not sure. I definitely don't feel like I'm missing out on these things.
So no, but it's more of an echo chamber. That's the point, isn't it? You're not getting the normie view, so to speak.
Yeah. For sure. That's true. And you don't get to argue with them and you don't get to insult them, which I used to so enjoy. I was going to say, you know, yes, I was addicted to the platform, but I was also having fun on it. I used to really enjoy going after them. It was great fun. But of course, that then became the thing that gets everyone banned, you know, by personally, because they just call it harassment. They say, well, you're it's personal harassment to reply to someone. You're a villain. But where was I? I was going with something. Oh, yeah, Neil
News.
Yeah, so I'm surprised at the things that he says because, I mean, he's obviously not red-pilled on certain issues.
He's a normal bloke.
Yeah, but his heart is really in the right place. And I think that it's like seeing an innocent person just witnessing evil and he's like not knowing anything about it, but just recognizing that it's evil, instinctively.
And he's shocked
knowing
by it as well. He's like, "What? Why is this? What's happening to my country, our society? What's going on?"
Yeah,
taking him completely off guard. Like, never saw it coming.
Mm. I mean, exactly. Because like 2 years ago, you didn't associate Neil Oliver of all people with this kind of thing. He was just a TV historian.
Yeah.
So I really admire him, and I also especially because I know what the atmosphere is like up in Scotland. It's more hardcore than in England. I mean, they're really into the. And actually, it kind of reminds me of why I was another reason that I was scared to stay there, because there is still this a certain what in a good age it would be a good thing to have this sort of community solidarity and people doing their bit and in agreement for the good of the majority. And you know, in a healthy age, that would be a healthy thing. But in our age, it's that man at number 10 is a racist. Let's make sure that he can't leave his house in daylight hours. That kind of thing. Or it's that family don't wear their masks in the supermarket. Let's make sure that we make them uncomfortable, make them guilt trip them so that they conform. It's that same tendency. And again, this is an example of how our good tendencies have been subverted and used against us. I mean, it's so disgusting.
I think a lot of it in Scotland is because of Nicola Sturgeon. And I think politics is complete theatre at this point. But I'll make this observation anyway. I think because of people like Nicola Sturgeon and the SNP and stuff, I think whatever they do and whatever England doesn't do, it's just politicized on another level. It's like, well, we're not going to do what the English are doing.
Oh, yeah.
It doesn't even matter if it makes sense. And yeah. It doesn't make sense. But it's like, if Boris is doing this, we're going to do the opposite.
Yeah, or we'll do it, but times two.
I'll compete them on nonsense, for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. If their measures are unnecessary, then ours will be doubly unnecessary and over the top.
Oh, it's absolutely mental. You know, I was, for my birthday earlier in the year, I went up to Scotland for a weekend, just a little country village somewhere. I can't remember what it was called, but it was really nice. And they never dropped the mask mandate.
Yes,
ever.
Yes.
That's been there all year. Yes. And I remember when I was there, I'm like, what the fuck? I have to wear a mask in a pub?
Yeah.
What are you talking about?
I went up there in, I think it was November. And I didn't know that it was still, they're still on that page. You know, it was like going back a year in time. It was very strange. I mean, every supermarket, every shop, everyone's got the mask on.
I mean, I don't wear a mask anyway. I don't give a fuck. Like, and that's been that way for a long time. But it was different up there because whereas here I can walk around and go into shops and whatever and not wear a mask and nobody really cares. I mean, I can count on one hand how many times someone at a door has said, have you got a mask, mate? I'm like, no, I don't. And then I just walk off. That's it.
Right.
At the very most, I just say, oh, God, I'm exempt. Leave me alone, right? But in Scotland, it was like I walk into a Tesco to buy whatever. And it's not just the people who work there that ask you. It's the people themselves, the citizens. They look at you with this sideways glance.
This is exactly
what are you doing? You know, what's up with you? Yeah. Are you not committed to the civic cause or whatever?
This is exactly what I was referring to. It's not just the sort of authority figures or the people in official positions who are enforcing this. It's the people themselves. And the thing is, in a healthy society, that would be a great thing.
Hmm.
You know, it's part of it's a survival mechanism. But in our age, it's perverted.
Yeah, of course. Now everyone's freaking out. Well, and again, I don't want to repeat all ground that you've already talked about, but it's not even about a virus for a lot of people. It's just about why aren't you conforming? Why aren't you doing what I'm doing?
Yes.
I mean, we can have a discussion. And this is why I made a huge mistake in early 2020 when this stuff was first kicking off. I think a lot of people have admitted that they got the initial, the initial diagnosis of this situation a bit wrong. I never discarded the conspiracy theories, but I was sort of on the fence. I'm like, really? Is that actually happening now? I don't know. And then I tried to shift the conversation into, well, when is it justified to use overbearing state power, right? That's the sort of conversation I tried to, you know, if there was a virus going around with a 20% mortality rate, for example, what is acceptable from the state? That's what I did. And I just thought that, well, that's just a fucking distraction because this is complete nonsense. This isn't anywhere close to that. This is a complete scam. The vast majority of people who get COVID, if it even exists, yes, I'm going there, will be fine. I've tested positive for COVID, by the way, earlier in the year. I don't know if I actually had it because, again, I don't really trust the tests and I never really got ill. I just had a bit of a cough, but I tested positive. And now, even though I've gotten over the actual virus without a vaccine, I'm now expected to get 3 jabs at least, forever, one every 6 months. That doesn't make any sense to me. And nobody can explain to me why that's the logical thing to do. It's not about health.
Exactly. I mean, it's gone beyond that point of having to be explained. It's now a sort of given in the public's mind that, well, of course. I mean, there was someone, a normie, who asked me "So how many jabs have you had now?" And I said, "Well, zero." And he just laughed out loud. He just laughed. You know, it's like he couldn't believe it.
He thought you were joking.
Yeah.
That's amazing. How many have you had? Well, Jesus Christ, they don't even work. What are you talking about? And this entire, again, it's not about health, but I'm just sort of speaking in terms of their paradigm and their reality here. If you've had the virus and you've recovered from it easily without jabs, why should you be expected to roll up your sleeve every 3 months? It doesn't make any sense, especially anywhere the official statistics of COVID are so minute that someone my age, 31 years old, no underlying health conditions, it's not going to affect me, statistically speaking. It's just not going to happen. So why am I being pressured? And nobody can answer this because they're trapped. Well, they're literally trapped in the matrix, which that's what's happening now.
Yes.
They've willingly plugged themselves into the matrix and they're just like, well, you've got to do it because that's what we're told to do. And there's no further explanation. That's it. And that's what I felt like when I was in Scotland for that birthday weekend. It was like, well, I enjoyed my birthday. I really did. I went to a zoo, actually. I love zoos. But when I went to a Tesco, I was like, well, this isn't very nice. These people are weird. I don't like this.
It's funny to think of the animals being in enclosures and so, and then all the people being in masks.
Exactly. That's funny. You know what? Honestly, I swear to God, I'm sure I've got pictures of this somewhere, but I swear to God, there was an elephant exhibit and there was an outdoor bit because it's a huge place where the elephant lives. There's, you know, tire swings and everything. But there was an inside bit where you could go in and look at the elephant over a balcony. But it's a huge barn thing. It's massive. It's like an airplane hangar. When you went into the into the inside bit, they told you to wear a mask to protect the elephant. It's like, what the fuck? The elephant's at risk from COVID. Jesus Christ. So yeah, I mean, it was mental up in Scotland, I have to say. Good Lord. Oh, much the same in Wales, apparently.
Oh, my God.
Total clown world, man.
To protect the elephant.
Yeah. Oh, dear me. I'm actually fucking crying right now. Fucking Dumbo's vulnerable.
God. That is amazing. Gosh.
I wish I could remember what the name of the zoo was so you could all go and see for yourselves. But it's, oh, dear.
I mean, it'd be awful if we had, since then, the elephant has actually died from COVID.
Oh, imagine that. Well, hang on. Has he died from COVID or with COVID? Come on, Colin. This has to be established.
It was a week after your visit. That's all we know.
Oh, God.
No, that is amazing. But yeah, to get back to the thing, I mean, it has become just a given at this point that this is the norm. And the numbers don't really matter. And no. This is why I think that we have to think in other ways now. Because clearly the public are much more malleable and less rational than we thought. And that's not the end of the world. It's not the end of the issue. But it's something that, you know, they are probably going to rebel and hate, as you said, like the people who defend the Matrix. And they do celebrate, you know, as I said earlier on, when they celebrate us getting doxxed and getting shamed and whatever. I mean, I don't know what the solution is. You know, Mark was poo-pooing my idea of contacting people in positions of power and disaffected elites. But I think that's an obvious thing to be doing, because it seems that there are limits to populism. That's what I would say. And that doesn't mean that populism is useless. Of course, it isn't useless. And of course, I support community building and so on. I just think that we need to think in other ways as well. At this point, and COVID has again has this is. Has shown this, I think.
yeah, it's exposed what we all knew was there to begin with, that the public, by and large, just obedient and they want to be told what to think and what to do. And again, I've made this point many times, in a fantasy hypothetical situation, if our guys were in power, then you would want an obedient population. But you would want that, because that's one way to just solidify your policies. But right now, it is they don't know what they're doing. And I don't want to call them stupid, because that's not very, you know, I think that's reductive. I just think they're not inquisitive. They don't think about it. It's just, okay, I'll do this because I was told to. And getting back to GB News, which is why, you know, you said populism again, I think they are trying to revive that, whether they realize it or not, this sort of dead wave of populism that was around in 2018. And on Telegram a couple of weeks ago, a couple of months ago now, actually, I said, sort of in jest, but actually with a strand of seriousness, I said, if GB News want to be effective, then they should basically copy my content and similar content from 2018 that was on YouTube and just sort of go down that route. Because we always talk about the Overton window. I think that's sort of where it is now. It's not at the demographic stage, but it is everything before then. And that's what I think. But, you know, they've got advertisers, they've got sponsors, all that sort of stuff. They've got personalities like Andrew Neil, who quit after a week or whatever the hell it was. And yeah, I mean, imagine a nice bloke like Neil Oliver, you know, reading a script that I wrote in 2018, for example. It's just not going to work. It's weird, isn't it? It's like a bit weird.
He has to operate from where he is. It would be artificial. And this is part of what's nice about seeing. It sounds so naff, but part of what's nice about watching his journey over the last year has been watching him toughen up, actually, and realize more and more the reality of the situation. The only thing I would say is a danger here is that it becomes a kind of porn where people are watching this guy getting more and more blackpilled. That's something that I've foreseen with Neil Oliver's stuff, that it becomes a sort of rumination on the sheer scale of our defeat, when it must not be that.
Here's the thing, though. I think as worrying as things are, especially when you look across Europe, and, you know, don't have to go into it, but Austria, Germany, places like that, Greece with their over 60s fines on people if they don't get the jab or whatever. You look to England, and England specifically, we had a long lockdown, but we have sort of resisted the more totalitarian elements of this stuff. And I don't know why that is. I it's very confusing to me. Because, like I said earlier, I think party politics is useless and it's all theatrical. But at the same time, that's not to say that I think every single elected MP is an actor or something. I genuinely believe there's a lot of people in Westminster who believe in what they say. They're there for genuine reasons. I think a lot of the Conservative backbenchers are genuinely wanting the Conservative Party to reform itself. But in the halls of power, in the leadership side of things, someone like, oh God, who can I name? Someone like Sir Desmond Swain. He could never become the Prime Minister. That's never going to happen. But he still exists in that room, and he can still insult anyone he wants. And it's sort of like, I think we're in a better position than the rest of Europe. I mean, these words might come back to bite me in the arse in 6 months' time, sure. But it's. Did you find it interesting how England has sort of held back a lot? Now, maybe they're just better at nudging us into that sort of compliance, but I don't know, it's interesting.
Another one would be David Amos, I've got to say. And
we know what happened to him.
Yeah. But yeah, I think that the English, because I know what Sargon would say, you know, that the English are, it's Anglo-individualism. The English have a love of liberty, and this is why classical liberalism is the English way, and so on. But the thing is, just to throw a spanner into that, there's a lot of anti-lockdown stuff in Germany.
Right.
I mean, and in some ways, if what I'm hearing is correct, it's more advanced there because they've got a much more organized, as you would expect, understanding of the medical stuff than we have over here. There seems to be a sort of infrastructure there for disseminating medical facts, medical information about, like, on our side. There's the opposition to the science of COVID is, I'm told, more advanced in Germany than it is in the Anglosphere, you know, putting Britain and America and Canada together, because really there is very little opposition to the science. That it kind of goes with the German character that they would go into the details of the, you know, the science, the molecules and virology and whatever. But also on the ground, there are these huge protests in Austria and Germany. So it's weird because I know that some, like Sargon, would attribute this thing in England to Anglo-individualism, yet the same thing is happening in Germany and Austria. I don't know about France. I also don't know about the Netherlands. I believe that there are quite big protests there as well. I really don't think that everything is lost. And I don't think that the victory of the Great Reset or Klaus Schwab and Bill Gates is inevitable. It did interest me to hear Bill Gates saying a few weeks ago that this hadn't gone as smoothly as he would have liked. And
That was very telling.
I wondered about that. I really wondered about what the significance of that was.
My position on all of this is it's hard to get a gauge on it. It's hard to even commentate on it or predict anything because we are in uncharted territory everywhere. The Austria stuff where they're going to try and make jabs compulsory or you're going to get fined and then thrown in jail. I know they've announced that, but again, I'll believe it when I see it because how is that going to even be enforced? And again, it's like, what do you believe? What do you accept? Because this might be blind optimism, but I think the wheels of this thing are going to fall off at some point because we are in uncharted territory. And it doesn't matter how many years have planned this for, all that. Putting it into practice is very, very different. And if you're going to get people jabbed up with boosters every 3 months, then how do you keep up that enthusiasm? It's hard, man. It's very, very difficult. So I don't know what's going to happen. And again, I think every country still has this attitude of we don't like this. But I was just making the point, England, in terms of a parliamentary political level, is a standout, really, in Europe at this point.
Yeah, I agree. Because of these Tory backbenchers, it seems. I mean, the Labour Party are completely useless. I've said that I don't really think I don't think this is being directed from the national level, the national governments. I think they're just following orders from above in the international chain. But of course, that doesn't mean that the politicians have to be impotent in all of this. I think it's just the political culture that it makes them impotent. You're always going to have some firebrands and rebels. And it's very possible that the longer this goes on, the more the public will vote in firebrands and rebels.
That's an optimistic view. I mean, it depends on if you think the voting process even matters anymore. I was thinking about this earlier, and I'm going to ask you the question now. Before I do that, I agree on the surface because I've seen videos of politicians across Europe. There was a video of some Dutch politician in their parliament, and he literally said to their prime minister, why do you have the Great Reset, the book, on your desk? Can you tell me about that? You know, and the prime minister was squirming. He's like, well, you know, it was just given to me by the world. It's like, okay, so why are you doing everything that it's saying then, basically? You know, it's very interesting. But in terms of voting in general, democracy, shall we say, if there was an election tomorrow in Britain, who would you vote for? Because I was thinking about this early today, and my answer is, unless there was just an independent from my town, I would vote for them just so they get their fucking deposit back. I wouldn't vote for anyone, really. Because I don't believe it's even a thing.
I mean, not the Lib Dems, not Labour. I would have to... I mean, I would hate to vote for a party led by Boris Johnson, but I guess it would be that just to strengthen the backbenchers.
So you would take part in the process, that's what you're saying. Even though you're cynical about it, you would still take part.
I don't know. I'd have to think, because it might well be, as you say, it'd be better to make the gesture of not taking part, not dignifying it with your participation. I'm not sure. I've never thought about this.
Yeah, I was just thinking earlier today, if they called, because, Boris Johnson's on, people say he's on thin ice. I don't know if that's true or not. If sometime next year he gets kicked out and then there's an election called, what would happen? Who would you vote for? And I think, honestly, like I just said, unless there was an independent so I could get their deposit back for them, I wouldn't participate. It's just the way it is. And because I don't believe in the system. I think the system's corrupt and it doesn't work. So, I mean, it's interesting. I can't even remember who I voted for in the last election. Because I know I didn't vote for the Tories or Labour or Lib Dems. I can't remember who I voted for. So I've had this position for a long time, but now it's just amplified. This is just,
of course,
I don't know what to do.
Yeah. And we've long felt alienated from the political process, but this has made it all the worse. I think what I would do is examine each of the parties for their COVID and Great Reset policies and just choose whichever party was most opposed to it all.
So that would be Reform, I guess, the rebranded Brexit party.
Yeah.
That's probably what I mean, I guess, but... My point is, it's like, how can you get enthused about this entire system when it's clearly not serving your interests or anyone's interests at this point?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I wouldn't be enthusiastic about voting.
you wouldn't skip into the voting booth like, I can't wait to put the X on the paper. No.
No. I'd do it, sorrowfully. But I probably would vote for that, yeah.
You would sign it with your tears. That's what you would do.
I think so. I think that would probably be the most sensible thing to do. But I would perfectly understand anyone just not taking part in it.
Yeah, I agree.
I get that. But anyway, I've realized that I've got Mike Enoch coming on in 15 minutes. So we should probably get to the questions. And there's some questions first, so we'll just get through those quickly. Because I think people are very glad to hear your voice, and I think it's like hearing an old friend. The Course of Empire says, I just wanted to give a token of support and say great streams. Also, will Dan revive the Iconoclast more like it once was, including the magazine? I almost had an article in the last one on partition in the US, but things went sideways for him almost immediately after, so it was shelved. What would you say, Dan?
I'm sorry that happened. It was out of my control, unfortunately. The thing with the magazine is it only survived because the main, like YouTube as a platform, made it so that I could advertise it to enough people that it made the magazine financially viable to produce. Because I don't think people realize this, but every issue, it literally cost me thousands of pounds to produce because I had to print everything. And then any money that was made in profit would go towards the next one. But without the big platform of YouTube, it's really difficult to even say that I would break even, really. So I don't want to do it as an ebook because, again, the entire point of it was physical media. Share it, read it, all that stuff. That's what I wanted to revive. Unfortunately, yeah. I can't see myself doing that. But in terms of content, again, I don't want to do the same thing I did before. It's just not interesting to me. I don't want to sing to the choir. If I'm not reaching people, then I'm not really bothered. If I come up with something, I will definitely give it a go. I'm more than happy to just sit back and observe things for now. And then, the drive is there. The drive really is there to start something, to build something, but it has to be different. It has to be better than before, really. And I don't know what form that's going to take, but I'm working on it.
See, I can really empathize, or is the word sympathize, whichever, because I remember in mid 2018, that was when my sort of writer's block set in, and I didn't know what to do. And there was a huge number of reasons involved, like stress, worry about the movement, worry about censorship, worry about my age and my situation. And
your age.
All of this. Well, I was realizing that I'm not young. I'm not like in my 20s anymore. And all that kind of, so all of this stuff was sort of piling on. It was,
I'm getting to that point now as well. I'm like, oh, no.
I mean, it was a huge number of different things. But it manifested as a sort of writer's block and paralysis. And then I did 4 videos in one day in a morning. They were all right. They were fine, and I put them up on the channel, but I watched them and I thought I don't like this. I'm not enjoying it anymore, and it feels like I'm on autopilot. I don't believe in this stuff. It's not that I don't believe in the ideas, but I didn't believe in what I was doing anymore. It had become kind of soulless, and yes. So that just made my I just felt worse after realizing that, and I did that. Hence, I mean, it really was getting banned from YouTube at the start of this year, and Telegram and Odyssey being available. The Telegram and Odyssey are what enabled me to start again, because it was something new. It was a new format on Telegram with the grams, and. It was a new lease of life. It was great. And of course, also the topics of COVID and so on. So it was a whole new thing. And up until then, it was difficult.
I think, put it this way, I could start an Odyssey channel. I've still got my BitChute channel. It's got like over 25,000 subs. It's there somewhere. I could start an Odyssey channel tomorrow and make videos again. But the point is, the only people who would watch them will be the people who already agree with everything I say and have heard me say it before.
Yeah.
That's not interesting to me, as much as I really appreciate anyone who's ever watched me or followed me. That's not the point. For me to be motivated, I need to be doing something that I think is worthwhile and striving towards something bigger, if that makes sense.
Absolutely, it does. I mean, I could say, well, you should pursue Odyssey because it's a growing platform and you probably will reach the public there in a few years. But it sounds more like you should wait and see if that happens.
That's my position. I'm happy to sit back and just observe at this point and see what happens. Because I know if I want to jump in, then I can do it. But, I mean, I've got enough confidence in myself to do that. But it has to be worth it in for more than just personal satisfaction.
Okay, Gus Faye said, ironically, it was a white homogenous Europe that moved towards individualism, which did produce benefits in that environment. You can afford to be individualist in a homogenous environment. You can. I mean, a homogenous environment also has the solidarity that we were talking about earlier. So a homogenous environment is just preferable in every way. It makes these different tendencies possible, whereas in a diverse environment, all you've got is clannishness. That's the only way to, or just to be a like literally in your cell on your own, no group, no identity whatsoever, just a consumer. So it's either that or it's clannishness. So those are two ways of dealing with diversity, and neither of them is nice. Neither of them makes for a good society. So homogenous environments obviously are preferable. Everyone knows that.
At the same time, though, you look at a country like Japan, and I think I heard you say in the last stream, you said Japan is sort of like the example of, the ethnostate is possible, etc. But it's not like Japan doesn't have problems. Of course, it has a lot of problems, and a lot of it has to do with, they're still atomized, even though they're homogenous. They still have an imbalance in their lives. They prioritize career and work, and they don't focus on family enough. And it's, all these fucking guys marrying video game characters and all that shit. It's just mental. So, I mean, you can look at that and say, okay, they've got some things right and they've got some things wrong. So you can use it as an example, is what I'm saying.
Yeah, but the fact that Japan isn't in a good way, despite being largely homogenous, is a really interesting thing. Yeah, that's a really important point, because it underlines that, yes, the demographic thing is obviously important, but there is also something more profoundly wrong with our age, with our way of being, because even Japan has the fertility crisis, depression, nihilism. There's something fundamentally wrong. It's not just the circumstances of, you know, politics or money or whatever. It goes deep.
Just a one more point on that. Their salarymen, which is the name that they give to the businessmen who work in the city, they work such long hours that they don't even get home at night. They sleep in the streets. They literally fall asleep on the streets and then wake up the next morning and go to work again. The thing is, Japan is such a low crime society that it's fine to do that. No one's going to mug you, right? But that's what they do. It's absolutely insane. So yeah, they've got a lot of things right, but my God, they've got a lot of things wrong as well.
Yeah. Okay, INM says defend Europe. Yes, thank you. And, you know, I don't mean to dismiss that. I'm just take it on board. Stephen says, keep up the good work. Thank you very much for that donation, Stephen. Katie Scottish says, all the best for 2022, everyone. Great content as usual, Woz. Bring back the iconoclast. It was the best intro. Bring back the iconoclast best intro for all time sakes.
Okay. I'll tell you what, that those 15 seconds are my legacy. That's it.
Oh, you have a much bigger legacy than that.
I'm fine with that, by the way. I'm cool with that.
It's good. Okay, Trad says, no true Scotsman would go out without a mask. Get back in line, mate. Yes, indeed. That's what we're talking about, the conformity.
When are we going to have elephant masks, for Christ's sake? Why isn't the elephant wearing a mask?
That is just the most bizarre story. Soaker City says, if you go from the point of view of motivation, the injection almost certainly is designed to lower the birth rate. It's the perfect way. I mean, I don't want to endorse that or condemn it. We don't have the medical knowledge to say what the vaccine does to people in terms of fertility.
Though there's been a lot of cases of menstrual cycles being affected by it, which is very, very worrying. And Morgoth posted about that today on Telegram. But again, like, you're not going to know that until a couple of years' time, really.
Yeah. Fucking ominous. I mean, how ominous is that? That, well, suddenly the fertility rate went down, even though there were still as many people in long-term relationships, but they just weren't able to have kids.
That's like Children of Men with Clive Owen. Yeah.
Yes, it's like a dystopian sci-fi thing.
But the only kid that was born in that was a black kid, if you remember.
Oh, God.
I was like, hey, this is the savior of humanity, this one.
All right. Have at you, splendid gentlemen. A song quote for you all. They can take our fists and... We cannot be defeated. Yes, okay. Yes, Caesar himself. Thank you with that. I won't read it out because it's a bit too violent. I think it's a quote from a poem. But it's not Fed posting. It's just a bit gross. But
cross the Rubicon, guys.
And then he says, to 2022 and beyond, vulneratus non victus, Latin translation, wounded, not defeated. Yes, exactly. And, you know, as Dan and I were saying earlier, we've all been a bit battered and bruised by the trials of being content creators and of a dissident flavor. But we are also still here.
I hope this stream hasn't come across as black pill, because I'm really not. I take the position where, well, I know the system's corrupt and I'm sitting here watching it. That's it. I'm not depressed. I'm not feeling like I'm in a sorrowful hole. I'm good. I hope the stream hasn't come across like that.
Oh no, I don't think it has. Don't worry. I don't think you don't sound black-pilled. You don't sound depressed.
No, I'm not. No.
All right. Okay, and finally, Vingul says, Dan's channel really helped me see things more clearly 4 or 5 years ago. And I know this is true for many of us. It paved the way for being open to the musings of Woes and others. Respect to you both. Well, thank you very much, Vingul. And
thank you.
I suppose in your earlier work, you were more, you were less red-pilled than you were at the end. So it kind of makes sense that you would, your early stuff would function as a bridge.
Well, of course, and you know what? I got linked the other day to some page that has mirrored all of my videos. I don't know how they do that, by the way. I don't know where they find them. But there's videos there that are from 2017, like really early 2017. And it annoys me in a way because I'm thinking, well, I'm glad that people care about my stuff enough to archive it and mirror it and put it back up. But if someone just stumbles upon them and, you know, watches a video from March 2017, they think, is this the Iconoclast? He's such an idiot Civnat. What's he talking about? You know what I mean? It annoys me that I can't organize these old videos into a timeline, so to speak, because my opinions have changed, my circumstances in life have changed, but you can't, whatever, I'm overthinking it, I suppose, but that's one of the downsides of not having that outlet anymore. You don't have control over your old work and people just put it anywhere and it's sort of out of context, you know.
Yeah, I know what you mean. When people will see a video of mine from like 2014 where I say something that I would now regard as very naive.
Supporting bestiality, Colin.
That wasn't naive. That was just retarded.
You support slavery, don't you, Colin?
Oh, for fuck's sake. No, I don't. Fuck's sake. You're giving them clips.
No, because I saw your Wikipedia article the other day, and I'm like, what God. The fuck is this? This is mental.
Ludicrous.
This is so ridiculous.
And the thing is, I have explicitly said, no, I'm not. I'm not pro-slavery. Incredibly enough, I'm not pro-slavery. But they just keep saying he's on record as having said he was pro-slavery.
But you're not!
It's fucking ridiculous. But of course, this is that they've got control. Right. Then, that was from Vingul, so thank you for that. And now there are some on Entropy, I believe. Let me just check. Don't want to miss any. No, there aren't any there. But there was one from... Okay, so... A rather obvious question. Have you had the vaccine?
Oh, I'm sextuple jabbed.
Oh, of course.
I had the next three in advance just to get it over with, you know. No, you know, I'm making a joke, but no, I'm not. And I don't intend to be, of course, for various reasons. But I understand. Yeah. I'm in a fortunate position because everyone in my life that matters to me is on exactly the same page as me. So I'm not under any pressure. And I know that's not the case for a lot of people out there. I know people have their family members who may think differently to them and they're trying to encourage them to do it. And I sympathize greatly. I would just say, hold the line. Just don't do it. Because, I don't think it's necessary. I think it's a scam. And I'm not going to do it no matter what.
Yeah. Okay. There's another one. Oh, yeah. Mr. Minority says, nice to see the Iconoclast on again. That's good.
Thank you.
I knew that people would be glad to see it. Hold on a second. Oh, yeah. Do you reckon that trigonometry will be banned from YouTube? No, actually. I think that people like the Critical Drinker are in more danger than trigonometry. Yes. Because trigonometry exists. It's like Jordan Peterson. It exists to prevent people from going further, whereas Critical Drinker inadvertently will make people go further, even though he might not mean to. I think just his stuff will.
Trigonometry. Trigonometry are liberals. They're not going
to. Oh yeah.
They're not going to. I mean, Christ! I remember early 2020 when the Groypers were trolling them. I sent them a super chat on their live stream just because I wanted to fuck with them, and. They still owe me £5 because they didn't answer the question. So I might lawyer up. I might take them to court.
All right. Okay. We'll end it there because I know that Mikey Nock is waiting.
Fair enough.
Let's see. Okay. All right. Okay. So let's wrap this one up. So Dan from the Iconoclast, I'm really glad that you appeared this year. So thank you for taking part in Millennial 2021.
Very fun. Thank you for having me.
All right. I'll be back very shortly with Mike Enoch. I'm glad we did this stream. So, me too. All right. Okay. Bye-bye for now.
Ciao, ciao.
Millennial Woes has created many things, and this is your chance to own one of them. A unique piece of work handcrafted by the Vile Vlogger to commemorate Millennial 2021. 100 hours of highly skilled labor went into producing this animated vector graphic, which can be magnified to any size. In the iconic Millennial Woes font, it glistens and responds to your touch. And at the center of it all, a figure representative of 2021, the White Stag, symbolizing endurance, discovery, and rejuvenation. This one-of-a-kind creation is up for sale as an NFT. Follow the link below, and it can be yours forever. This is your only chance.